If you're trying to get more of your local food on the menu for international diners, it's probably a smart move to start wooing international chefs. That's exactly what Victorian farmers are hoping a visit by some of the best Chinese cuisine chefs in the world might lead to. The foodie tour was designed to give 10 chefs from top hotels in Singapore and Malaysia a chance to connect with producers in Gippsland in eastern Victoria and get a taste of what the region has to offer. The trip, which was organised by Meat and Livestock Australia, is all about getting more produce into Southeast Asia. Bridget Fitzgerald met the chefs and their entourage at a property at the mouth of the Snowy River.
The back veranda at Andrew French's place offers a stunning view of the floodplains at the mouth of the Snowy River, with the Snowy Mountains themselves rising up in the background. Today, the veranda is packed with people chatting, taking photos and tasting some strange-looking vegetables that Andrew French and his wife Gabby produce.
We're showing them our variety of sea vegetables that we grow here at the mouth of the Snowy River, or the ones that we've got in season at the moment we're showing them. So that is beach bananas, sea spray, a new one we've got called oyster leaf, we've got a bit of sea parsley, and we've got three types of seaweeds that we're growing.
And these chefs look like they're thoroughly enjoying what's on offer. Andrew French already exports his product to Amsterdam for distribution around Europe, but if these chefs like what they see, he could have a potential new market.
Yeah, there's a lot of chefs here today from Asia and they're very interested in it. It's been a good thing, especially the seaweeds that we're growing for garnishes and also for their sushi and just on seafood dishes.
And do you think it's important to have events like today where you actually bring these chefs here so that they know that you exist, first of all, and that this produce is an option for them?
Yeah, it is important, and it's due to the food cluster and the council, a food trail's got to exist here. And a lot of the farmers here have got to look at niche markets and things they can specialise in and start getting more of a farm gate activities going in the area, because this is really a pristine area for agriculture.
But the chefs that have visited the region are already impressed by the range of food produced here. Richard Lim is the executive chef at the Kuala Lumpur Convention Centre. He just sat down to a plate of carpaccio beef from an East Gippsland farm when I spoke to him, and he was very happy.
I love it. Okay, I find that wok beef are quite flavourful, and the best thing is this is my first time having the beef carpaccio with the sea bananas and all sort of nice sea growing in it over there.
So what's the motivation for you to come along with these chefs and, I guess, expose them to some of this food?
These chefs have very seldom been exposed to all these products. Yeah, and with these trips, actually before this trip, they have prepared themselves and we have actually come up with many recipes in terms of beef and lamb. And we also try to gather some products and it's knowing the characteristic of the products, the taste, the flavour, and how this can actually blend into the everyday cuisine they have been preparing and give something new ideas, new taste, new flavour to the guests as well in Malaysia and in Singapore.
And Meat and Livestock Australia are hoping that these chefs want to bring all the food they taste back to their kitchens. Rose Yong manages MLA's relationships in Malaysia, Singapore, Thailand, Myanmar and Brunei. She was instrumental in bringing these chefs to Victoria and she hopes it's going to create export opportunities.
The purpose of the mission is we have brought along 10 Chinese master chefs from Malaysia and Singapore. They are from high-end restaurants and hotels in Malaysia and Singapore. So they are actually undergoing a program under the MLA Red Majesty Chef, whereby we introduce them to the usage of Australian beef and lamb, and also to sample and experience all the quality products from Gippsland in Australia. I think the motivation is these chefs, they all have a lot of passion and they are bold to make changes, and they are very keen and also very passionate about using Australian beef and lamb and all other products from Australia, especially in Gippsland and also Victoria, because it actually complements the beef and lamb very well. You just can't have a dish just a protein. You need the complements. So rather than just using like the normal vegetable that you can get in the market, why not try the sea bananas or try, you know, nori wheat or some other product that can go with the beef and lamb? It complements very well.
What can MLA do to try and facilitate some of the export that might arise out of a situation like this, or, you know, different kinds of trade opportunities?
Mm-hmm. I think it all comes down to the end users. The end users are the chefs who drives the market. They are the one who set the trend. A buyer may not understand how the products will be able to help them in the industry, but the chefs, the end users, are the one who make it happen.
And that's Rose Yong from MLA, ending that story from Bridget Fitzgerald. Now to Tasmania, where the devastating and rapid floods of recent weeks have claimed national attention. And while most of that was focused on Launceston in the state's north, parts of northwest Tasmania were also inundated, including the Morgan French's property. Their farm on the Arthur River had its paddocks transformed into lakes, and they lost a third of their dairy herd as flash flooding tore through the property. Margot Kelly visited the farm as the clean-up was underway and caught up with Joanne Morgan French.
The kitchen is full, food covers the table, and children are running around in the living room. This is as warm, welcoming and safe a farmhouse as you might ever step into. But this dairy farm on the Arthur River has had a whirlwind last 6 months. The fires that burnt through the wilderness of Tasmania came right up to the perimeter of this farm. As suppliers of Murray Goulburn, their milk price was slashed in late April, along with many other dairy farmers in the country. 3 weeks ago, Joanne Morgan French gave birth to a healthy baby boy. But on Monday, one third of their dairy herd has been washed down the river as the furthest west property affected by the Tasmanian floods. Where we're sitting now, what did this look like on Monday?
Noah's Ark needed to come through. It was covered with water. The majority of the farm was affected by the flood. Just a torrent of water flowing through what was supposed to be a dairy farm.
When did you know that it was going to flood here?
Pretty much 5 o'clock in the morning of Monday, going to get the cows. Everything seemed normal, as like it was going to be a normal flood. And I went down to get the cows, and we were already cut off from the first herd. And because it was dark, I didn't want to go too far with the motorbike. So I came back to get the tractor. But because I couldn't really see I didn't have a good vision with even just the tractor lights. And I know how deep the water can get down there, so I made the decision to wait till daybreak so we could actually see where we were going. And then once the sun was light enough to see, we went back down on the motorbike, and more water had started coming in. So it was sort of a bit of dire straits to get to these cows, but we still couldn't get to them with the motorbike. So it just kept gradually rising and rising and rising, and come the afternoon, we could see the cows that were on the high point. The ones that we could see were actually up to their bellies in water, and we had no way to get down there, so we had to call in a friend who had a little tinny. We launched the tinny off the road into the paddock. Him and Dad actually went across the paddock straight over the fences because the water was that high, and managed to get out to the cows, cut the fences and swim them over to the cow shed.
When did the waters peak here?
It would have peaked at about 9:30 that night, I think, between 9:30 and 10 o'clock that night.
So there was just water coming in fast from before the sun rose till well after sunset?
Yeah, it was unbelievable.
When did you get a chance to take stock of what had actually happened under that water?
Well, we lost a number of cows to the river at this stage. Yeah, it's a 200 plus, just devastating fences, infrastructure of all the fences, the cow shed went, all the generators, anything electrical was submerged underwater, and we lost some cows out of the ones that we had at the shed, which actually must have been floating, and they got caught in things that sort of, obviously, they drowned because they were caught, you know, legs were caught in fences or things like that. So, yeah, the next day was a bit horrifying. Yeah.
It's a bit of a hive of activity in your house today. It's a different scene as we're sitting here. You got your kids here. You got a stream of men coming in to help out. What's happened since people found out about the flooding that's happened here on your property?
Oh, the community, they've been really good. We've had people drop calf pallets. They've helped out to clean out the cow shed, mud, cleaning of walls. The electrical guys that have come out to fix stuff, Cape Country, the amount of people that have been lending a hand and donating things that are needed is just, yeah, it's been amazing. So everyone's sort of pulled together and made us feel like, you know, it's not the end of the world.
The road from the house to the dairy is a few hundred metres long, completely flat but absolutely potholed and bumpy as the gravel is being washed away with the floodwaters. And at the moment it's peppered with a bunch of locals and farmers squatting by the side of the road trying to re-establish the fence line. And I've just spotted one of them is the circular-haired mayor, Daryl Quillam.
Well, I was coming out yesterday just to see how bad it was, and when I got here I realised that it was a mess and that we needed to do something to help people. So I talked to my boss in town, and so he was happy to have a couple of people here for two or three days, as long as it takes.
People from Flowerdale, Smithton, how many people are here?
There'd be 10 or a dozen people here today, and there's other people that are working on machinery to get that going as well. Yeah, it's just a community thing that we do. It's just fantastic.
And that's Circular Head Mayor Daryl Quilliam ending Margot Kelly's report from the flood-affected Arthur River Farm. Well, amidst all those stories of inundation, damage and loss, there are some remarkable experiences of fortitude, resilience and recovery. Imagine the range of emotions for one farming couple who thought they'd lost their entire dairy herd, only to discover that by hook or by crook, some had survived. Cows were propping themselves up on farm machinery, and even bobby calves climbed the stairs of an abandoned farmhouse, all to try to evade the floodwaters. Sally Dacus reports on the experience of Jeff and Anne Hazelwood at their Merseybank Jersey Stud, which is nestled in behind the Trobe, just outside Launceston.
The Hazelwood family's connection to their dairy farm of Rich River Flats on the banks of the Mersey River stretches back five generations. The surge of floodwater on Sunday night topped their levee bank, which had never been breached before. When I phoned Jeff Hazelwood on Monday morning, shortly before he was helicoptered out, he was standing in his home, in water, looking out over a torrent of brown floodwaters charging past his front gate. It was a pretty bleak scenario.
I'm standing in our living room of the house, which is currently 18 inches underwater. It's up to the kitchen table. I can't see the farm or the dairy at all. I don't know the position on the stock. I know we have lost some. I'm just hoping it's not all of them.
Your father-in-law is being evacuated with a rubber ducky?
That's correct. My wife's just gone over to give them assistance. She's going out with him. Well, I can hear my cows. Thank God for that.
Is it just too wet to see the cows?
Oh, yeah, I can see them swimming. Oh, shit. I'm sugar. Yeah.
So, is there some place for them to swim to?
No. Oh, here they go. Go on.
Well, to prove just how quickly life can change, it's 4 days later. I'm in the Perkins dairy shed, where Jeff is milking his girls.
Well, they got a bit of milk this morning. I'm quite happy.
They're now milking two herds twice a day.
Fortunately, we were only 10 cows down. Eight cows down in the herd and 25 calves. You know, that's a lot better than I'd ever hoped for. We've got photos of cows standing with their front feet up on machinery to get their heads up out of the water. We could actually see some on Monday afternoon from the street eastwards of here, which is probably 400-500 metres away at least. And with the binoculars, we could see the cows huddled in behind the barn. They were obviously in water over a metre deep, but we could see a few moving around. And at that stage, I knew there was a few there if the water went down. I had no idea how many. We were fortunate enough to get back in on Tuesday morning when the level dropped. We came in the Army Unimog, and I could see a few cows around, but not many, and went back to the dairy and called, and cows just arrived from everywhere. That's yeah, that was, yeah, that was a bit heartening. There was also calves came from everywhere. And of our 48 calves, there's 23 turned up. Yeah, and there was half a dozen that there's an old original homestead on the place that was probably built in about 1850 or something like that, I think. It's dilapidated, no longer used, but it's got an internal staircase, and the calves had gone up the staircase and into the top of the roof. And when we called, they came, you know, suggesting that it was probably a little bit late for breakfast.
Well, can you describe your relationship with your cows? Because, I mean, they are your livelihood, but they're more than just an asset, aren't they?
Yeah, you know, they're a lifetime's work, and I think any farmer would understand about his livestock, whether it be sheep or whatever, what they mean to them. I suspect that people from the city probably don't.
How does it change the way you feel about the place, having gone through such a traumatic experience?
I still love the farm. It's been in my wife's family for five generations. We're not about to change that. It's just the sheer size of the flood, the quickness that it came, I think caught everybody unawares. You know, I feel very sorry for my neighbours. I know they've lost a lot of their young stock. You know, the whole valley has been devastated. I cannot but emphasise the support of the community. You know, the total strangers almost bringing up, donating food, donating places to stay. It's just overwhelming, the support of, you know, not only the local community, it's all over Australia. You know, we've people, you know, wanting to fly in from, you know, all states to give us a hand. You just don't realise, well, hey, how many friends you've got, I guess. It's been amazing, absolutely amazing. We just wish it didn't have to be in these circumstances.
Jeff Hazelwood there at La Trobe talking with Sally Dacus. And some incredible images from that exact story. You can find them online from the Hazelwoods property. You can actually see some aerial shots of the cows when the property was in full flood at abc.net.au/rural. Nick Mearish was in charge of our technical production this week. I'm Edwina Farley. I hope you can stay with us on RN.